and welcome to Hindsight. I'm Lorena Allam. Like the rest of you, we are so sad to hear of the passing of Nelson Mandela. He was a hero to millions, and many of us recall crying with joy, watching him finally walk free from prison in 1990. Today's program is about that place where he spent 27 years of his life, Robben Island, off Cape Town. Mandela's ANC colleagues, and later members of his government, Walter Sisulu, Ahmed Kathrada and Govan Mbeki, take us on a sound journey into the prison. They recall with elegance and dignity what their lives were like in a prison, inside the prison of apartheid. The program opens with a reading from Mandela's autobiography, where he recounts how he felt when he first arrived, sentenced to life for treason. This extract is read by Paul Tuzi.
Journeying to Robben Island was like going to another country. I was assigned a cell at the head of the corridor. It had a small eye-level window. I could walk the length of my cell in 3 paces. When I lay down, I could feel the wall with my feet, and my head grazed the concrete at the other side. Each cell had a small white card posted outside it with our name and our prison service number. Mine read N. Mandela 466/64, which meant I was the 466th prisoner admitted to the island in 1964. I was 46 years old, a political prisoner with a life sentence, and that small cramped space was to be my home for I knew not how long. Within a few months, our life settled into a pattern. Prison life is about routine. Each day like the one before, each week like the one before it, so that the months and years blend into each other. Anything that departs from this pattern upsets the authorities, for routine is the sign of a well-run prison. The challenge for every prisoner, particularly every political prisoner, is how to survive prison intact, how to emerge from prison undiminished, how to conserve and even replenish one's beliefs. One must know the enemy's purpose before adopting a strategy to undermine it. Prison is designed to break one's spirit and destroy one's resolve. The authorities attempt to exploit every weakness, demolish every initiative, negate all signs of individuality, all with the idea of stamping out that spark which makes each of us human and each of us who we are. Our survival depended on understanding what the authorities were attempting to do to us and sharing that understanding with each other. It will be very hard, if not impossible, for one man alone to resist. I do not know that I could have done it had I been alone. But the authorities' greatest mistake was to keep us together, for together our determination was reinforced. We supported each other and gained strength from each other. Whatever we knew, whatever we learned, we shared. And by sharing, we multiplied whatever courage we had individually. That is not to say that we are all alike in our responses to the hardships we suffered. Men have different capacities and react differently to stress. But the stronger ones raised up the weaker ones, and both became stronger in the process. Prison and the authorities conspired to rob each man of his dignity. But that assured I will survive, for any man or institution that tries to rob me of my dignity will lose, because I will not part with it at any price or under any pressure. I never seriously considered the possibility that I will not emerge from prison one day. I never thought a life sentence truly meant life, and that I will die behind bars. Perhaps I was denying this prospect because it was too unpleasant to contemplate. But I always knew that someday I would once again feel the grass under my feet and walk in the sunshine as a free man.
and go to the front side. Very nice in front there. Take it easy, lady. You can go to the front side.
Today, you are all part of history in the making. Dallas is one of the historic vessels that was used to transport prisoners to and from the island. The Robben Island is entering a new future. We wish you a pleasant and a memorable tour. Moleni Galoku.
This same boat was used to transport prisoners 9 kilometers from the Victoria and Alfred waterfront in Cape Town to a small island 5.5 kilometers long by 1.5 kilometers wide. Today, this boat transports tourists who want to visit the island, an island which has sheltered for 4 centuries those deemed undesirable to society by the South African authorities, a dreaded island. In the year 1617, 2 British criminals had the choice between hanging and Robben Island for life. They chose Robben Island, but not long after they begged the authorities to hang them. Robben Island has been a human dumping ground for 400 years. The Khoi Khoi, accused of petty crime, the Xhosa chiefs, who opposed British imperialism, the criminals, the mentally sick, the lepers, the prostitutes, and those that we wanted to keep silent and forget, the political prisoners. In 1964, the Rivonia trialists, from the name of the suburb of Johannesburg where they were arrested, are sentenced to life imprisonment and sent to Robben Island. They are isolated from the 1,500 or so other prisoners, most of them political prisoners, because they are thought to be too influential. They were right. A lot of Robben Island prisoners are today members of parliament, prime ministers, councillors, professionals, and yes, even president. The Nelson Mandelas, Walter Sisulus, Governor Mbeki's, and Ahmed Kathrada spent a good part of their prison sentence on Robben Island before being transferred elsewhere. Robben Island had a concentration of political activists from a wide range of different liberation movements, and that, as the prisoners themselves will tell you, influenced not only life in prison, but especially life on the mainland and in the world.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Robben Island on this lovely crisp morning. And I trust that you've had a pleasant ferry from Cape Town. My name's Vanessa, and I'll be one of your guides to take you through the tour of Robben Island. Our driver is Simon, and one of our ex-political prisoners, Lionel, who has served a sentence on Robben Island, will be taking you on a tour of the prison. The name of the island, Robben Island, comes from the Dutch word robbe, meaning seals. On this road, ladies and gentlemen, you'll notice some of our species of bird on the island. We have approximately 74 species of bird, and we also have some of our buck. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we don't have any seals for some unknown reason. We don't have any more seals on the island, but we do have a colony of approximately 10,000 penguins.
My name is Lionel Davis. I was a political prisoner here from 1964 until 1971. We are now coming to our penguin colony. It's the Cape Jacques penguin, and it's called the Cape Jacques penguin because the jacques is a donkey and it makes a noise like a donkey.
Thank you. approaching the more built-up area on Robben Island, the village, and this is where the warders and their families used to live. We are at an intersection. The road we are going to be crossing is known as Boundary Road. It's the longest road on the island. It's approximately 2.5 kilometers long, and it cuts the island in half. It also separated the prison section from the village section. The building on your right-hand side is the hospital, the infirmary, which was used by the warders and their families, and the building also dates back to the Second World War. On your left-hand side, the sports facilities used by the warders and warders only, tennis courts, rugby fields, and the running track. The church coming up on your right-hand side was where the male lepers worshipped. It's known as the Church of the Good Shepherd. It was built in 1895 by the lepers. The building on your right-hand side used to be the old flagstaff, used as an officer's mess, and now we use it as the building as our primary school. We have a little influx of pupils this year. We have 7 pupils and 1 teacher. Coming up on your right-hand side, the medium security prison. We had criminals on the island who were mixed with the political prisoners. But once these political prisoners started influencing these criminals, the criminals were separated from the political prisoners and brought to the medium security prison. And I'm going to be handing over to Lionel.
Come with me, people. We are going to jail. We were brought over here in chains. Nobody entered these premises without first knocking. And you had to knock, and you called, Dankiek, thank you, gate. And then the warder inside on duty will then. Dankiek! Welcome to prison. This is the kind of experience that you have. For a long time, when even once you've left jail, you hear the banging of doors and the ringing of keys. You don't get rid of it easily.
My name is Governor Mbeki. I am 86. I was elected to the Senate in Parliament in 1994. Where I became deputy chairman of the Senate. I spent 23 and a half years on Robben Island alone. I remember how we kept watch on the movements of the warders. Often we had to rely on the ear because he carries keys. We would have to hear the clink of the keys and then listen carefully because we're prohibited from speaking to one another. Listen carefully at the opening of the main gate and then the word would go round. The master key makes a lot of noise.
This then is the B section of the prison. In this section, we had the leadership of political organizations incarcerated. Here we had Nelson Mandela, Governor Mbeki, Ahmed Kathrada, and others from the ANC.
My name is Ahmed Kathrada. I'm 68 now. I am parliamentary councillor in the office of the president. I was sentenced to life imprisonment in 1964, together with President Mandela and others. Spent 18 years on Robben Island, and the remainder of my sentence at Portsmouth Prison. So all in all, I was in prison for 26 years. When we arrived here, it was a very cold June morning. Cold and wind and rain and all, as you find in Cape Town in June. The first thing we had to do is to change into prison clothes. Now, I was the only Indian among the Rivonia people who came here. I was given normal clothing, long trousers, shirts, jersey, socks, shoes. All my colleagues were given short trousers. Right through the winter, they had to wear short trousers. And African prisoners were not given socks. African prisoners were given sandals, generally made of tire, motorcar tires. But after much agitation and hunger strikes and so forth, we managed to equalize the clothing in about 3 or 4 years. Food discrimination was there. In the morning we had the same food, dish of porridge, a mug of soup, mug of coffee. But the African prisoners were given less sugar than us. In the evening, the African prisoners were just given porridge again and soup. We were given bread, quarter loaf of bread. African prisoners were not given bread. It's a very uncomfortable feeling, and instinctively one wants to reject that. But then President Mandela and Walter Sisulu in particular persuaded us that it would be wrong politically to reject what you've got. Our fight should be for equality on a higher level, not to go down. So Mandela and them were right in persuading us not to reject what we got. Eventually we managed to get everything equal. Of course, whites were given best, but they were not here. White prisoners were not kept here. They were kept in Pretoria and other prisons. There were no women prisoners here either. It was just African colored and Indian prisoners, and all the warders were white. When I first went to prison as a young man in Durban, we worked in the yard there, and there were three toilets next to each other. The first toilet was the warder's toilet, which is a full door and all that. Second toilet was the white prisoners. It had half a door. And the last one was ours, with no door. Now, when we arrived here in 64, there were about 1,500 prisoners. Most of them stayed in the side of the prison. These communal cells sometimes had 70 or 80 prisoners in one cell. And of course, our side, there was only single cells right through. It was called isolation section or punishment section.
They were separated, placed here because they did not want the leadership to give guidance and influence the general political population. When we came here in 64, this place was bitterly cold. We were confined to our cells over there. We were brought out for half an hour exercise in the morning. They called it exercise. In that half an hour, we walked around in a circle. We were not allowed to talk to one another. If you talk to another person, it was a punishable offense.
As things relaxed, they allowed us to play sports. This was built in about mid-70s, and then we played volleyball here and tennis. The president played tennis. He was quite good at it. Where this long wall is, we had a garden all along the wall. And when the president wrote his autobiography, the original manuscripts were buried in the garden here. Then suddenly one day they came and started building this wall. And they discovered some of these plastic containers in which we had hidden the originals. And for that, three of us were punished.
Fortunately, they had smuggled out the transcript. They had written it over, and they smuggled it out. Mac Maharaj smuggled it out. But the originals were found in the, discovered in that garden. Nelson Mandela, Ahmed Kathrada, and Walter Sisulu, all whose handwriting were on those manuscripts, were sentenced in court here. They lost their study privileges for 4 years.
That's the cell of President Mandela. It's about 8 feet by 8 feet. The bed here would give a wrong impression. President Mandela and some of us, although we spent 18 years here on the island, for what, 14 of those years, there were no beds. It was very cold.
Notice, in the cells, on the floor, there are two mats. Initially, we only had one sisal rope mat. That's the one underneath. And then, because it was bitterly cold, we complained bitterly. They gave us another mat, and that's a felt mat that is lying on top of the other one. Three blankets. Notice that there is no toilet in these cells. We had a little bucket.
This here was the cell of Governor Mbeki, Thabo Mbeki's father. So mine is number 14, and then number 17 was Walter's. This one here.
I am Walter Sisulu, 85 of age. I'm a former vice president of the ANC. I was in Robben Island for 18 years. One of the first things you see is when I was just newly arrived in Robben Island, one morning I got up sitting next to my cell. I hear the voice, Hadlop! And I hear the answer, Eges ni malni. Hadlop, walk fast. In other words, run. Egesni malni, I'm not mad. The answer is from the prisoner. I like that very much because it was defiant, and it was defiant on a right point, which I felt that it was humiliation to say, to tell people to be running around. Nelson Mandela was intervening here, and he said we must walk even slower than usual. Then they realized that unless they speak to us in a decent way, we were not going to listen to orders. And that is how we ended up the question of Hadlop.
In the morning, when we were about to get up, the warder would come and each prisoner's door, he would bang against the door to wake you. So it was always a shout, a curse to wake you up. Never a decent, nice word.
The sound also when warders were beating some of our people. Our young chaps would bear the beating by the warders. So we had to warn them that the bure will kill you. Cry when they start beating you. Bello make a lot of noise. Then we will make a lot of noise throughout the jail to stop, get them to stop beating you.
Oh,
years that we were here, or for most of the years, we only had cold water, very cold. It was very, very cold. And then we've got no fresh water on the island. We've only got brackish water. Brackish water is something between sea water and fresh water. This was the recreation hall. What we had here is a table tennis table. And in later years, the Red Cross gave us a little billiard table. And also on weekends, we used to see films here. Because the only restriction was that they didn't allow us to select films that talked of jail escapes, like Papillon. Lights remain on all the time, at night also. Even though if you're studying, stand at 8, you sleep at 8 o'clock, even with the lights on. And if you're studying matric, you sleep at 10. And if you're doing university, you sleep at 11. And anybody who's caught reading after those hours can be punished, because there used to be warders walking up and down quietly trying to catch people who were studying after hours. Generally, it was a deprivation of meals if they caught people studying. So in these cells, this was the home. We did everything here. Slept here, ate here, exercised here, studied here. One can't believe that one could spend 18 years in a little place like this. I could stand on a chair here and look outside. And in the afternoons, after they lock us up, when it's quiet, you see animals there, buck, ostriches, and so forth.
Whistling, singing were not allowed. Now, singing, take my case. If there's anything that has kept me alive, singing. Singing in my cell, talking in my cell, moving up and down in my cell. That is what really gave me confidence. Well, let's see. J.B. Marx, Upapeli Kotane. That was an indication to say to the people, we are going to be in parliament. These are the men who will represent you.
Instruments were not allowed at first, but later on were allowed to buy musical instruments. I chose a guitar, so I used to play a guitar, and we used to enjoy it. It was wonderful. And some of them, especially Nelson, used to love to come dancing around us as we were playing the guitars. And in the main section, that is, you know, Robben Island has got 7 jails. In the other sections, they had a band. It was beautiful. They played saxophones and drums and so on. But it was beautiful.
We had a recreation committee of prisoners. Now that used to be in charge of selecting the music and playing it to us in the evenings. Well, one of the favorite singers was Harry Belafonte. And one of his songs had a special meaning for me, because in the song he speaks of Sylvie, who used to visit him, supposed to be in prison, and bring him tea, bring him coffee. And he complained in his song that she brought him every damn thing except the Jay Rouse key.
In the wild, she bought me a little coffee. She bought me a little tea. Well, she bought me nearly every damn thing, but she didn't bring the jailhouse key.
Digging in the lime quarry, at first we were singing.
Chocholoza,
singing makes harmony, makes you feel, you know, you gain strength. So when they noticed that we were enjoying it and were singing, we were inspiring and inspiring each other, they stopped it.
We are now in the lime quarry, and this is where Nelson Mandela spent 13 years of his incarceration working. The place is extremely hot in summer, and then again extremely cold in winter. There's a fine dust that comes from the lime that clogs your nose, clogs, it gets into your ears, into your eyes. It stings your body.
We were sentenced to life imprisonment with hard labor. So the quarry was where we were supposed to do our hard labor. It was also the place that they identified not only to punish us with hard labor, but also to try and crush our spirits. But because of the close relationships among us, and especially because of the older people among us, Mandela and Sisulu and Mbeki and others, who helped a great deal to keep our spirits up. If they would see at any stage that one of the prisoners was in a low spirit, they would immediately come, especially Sisulu. Also, during our hunger strikes, we had quite a few hunger strikes here. And among ourselves, we had decided that the older people and the people who are not so well should be exempted from the hunger strikes. But even there, President Mandela and Sisulu never wanted this exemption. They took part in all the hunger strikes and took the punishments as the punishments came.
We are now going to a place of incarceration for one of our great South African political leaders, Robert Mangali Sobukwe.
Robert Sobukwe was the leader of the PAC, which was another liberation movement which was banned also in 1960 together with the ANC. They had in 1960 started an anti-pass campaign, which resulted in the Sharpeville massacre when 69 people were killed.
Robert Sobukwe was sentenced for incitement in 1960 to 3 years because the South African government feared him and his potential to lead the people. They then passed a law which then allowed them, gave them permission to keep a political prisoner longer than his a hard sentence.
So they brought him here. They kept him alone in this hut. But he wasn't a prisoner like we were. And he spent 6 years here, all alone. There was no communication between him and us at all. He was completely isolated.
Not even the warders were allowed to talk to him. For 6 lonely years, he had to live in this compound here. He was released, and in 1979, he died. He died of cancer. A brilliant guy.
We are fast approaching another quarry on the island. Now, this time a stone quarry, and I'm going to be handing over to Lionel, who will tell you more about the stone quarry.
This then, what we have ahead of us on the seaside here, is the stone quarry. Hundreds of political prisoners were working here. This is where they strung you up by your hands against a pole and left you there for the day. This is where political prisoners were thrashed with batons in the quarry. And this is where they used to bury political prisoners up to their necks in sand and urinate on their heads. This was a hell hole, this quarry.
This cold wind that's blowing across this Benguela current. You are wearing the thinnest of clothing. Short pants, sandals, no socks. And you have the thin shirt and jacket. And you have to sit here. In fact, they used to take away the prisoners' jackets. They wanted you to suffer, to feel, you know, to regret having, you know, turned to politics. Then they would sit down there, and on a piece of rock, somebody would come with a wheelbarrow loaded with this kind of stone. And your job for the whole day was to break these rocks into little bits. And then, of course, you had to fulfill your quota. You could not just come here on a leisure time. At the end of the day, if you didn't fill your wheelbarrow and a half of stone, they would take away your meals. So this is the work, mindless work, that you had to do day in, day out, year in, year out. For years, people did this mindless work.
The few that have written about Robben Island have told the miserable side of the story about Robben Island. But I say we require people to do a little more research, because there's a positive side, the humorous side. Things like how sometimes we stole newspapers. There was a preacher, we called him Brother September, I think, yes. He used to come every Sunday to preach to us. And we attended his services, not so much because we were interested in them, but because we wanted sunshine out in the yard. Now, he would take his prayers and religion very seriously. He would close his eyes when he was praying. And so one day we asked one of our men who was very fluent in Afrikaans, we asked him to ask Brother September to allow him to pray. And so Felix he was, and Brother September allowed him. He started praying in fluent Afrikaans. And Brother September closed his eyes as was his practice. And it was a lengthy prayer. In the meanwhile, Eddie Daniels crept quietly to open his briefcase and take out a whole copy of the Sunday Times. And then when he had finished, closed the briefcase and walked away. Then we gave an indication to Felix to stop praying. You see, those are incidents which are not mentioned in the course of this serious thesis. And there are many such things that happened on Robben Island. Things that would make you laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. It was not all gloomy all the time. There were moments when we celebrated victories we had over the enemy, like communications. Communication was one of our biggest problems when we came to Robben Island. Not allowed to get in touch with our comrades in other sections.
I mean, there are people here whom I knew from outside, friends, who spent 10 and 15 years here, but we never saw them, ever. So we had to communicate with them through illegal means. For instance, the prisoners would be playing here, and a tennis ball would come over accidentally to our side, and we'd see a little slit in the tennis ball, and inside the tennis ball would be a message. We would retrieve that, put in our message, and throw the ball back.
But we had to beat them to it, and we did. And we were very happy about it.
What we missed, children's voices. Never heard of it, and the day we heard of it, we were excited. Many years thereafter.
And children, that's one thing that one missed. Children, you would long for the day when you touch the velvet skin of a baby.
I missed children the most because this was an adult world. There were no children at all. The first time that I held a child in my hand was in 19... I think it was after about 22 years at Portsmouth Prison. The harshness of the apartheid system, the suffering, the hardship, those are all part of history, part of reality. But in my opinion, the main message that goes from Robben Island should be a message of triumph, message of victory. Because Robben Island was identified by the enemy at the time as the place where they were going to crush the activists of the movement and the leadership who was here. And the political prisoners took up that challenge and did not allow themselves to be subdued by the authorities. And in the end, I say it was a triumph because from Robben Island and other prisons, people got into parliament and into government. President Mandela, for instance. The whole negotiation process, you can say, started the genesis of the negotiation. You can say started in prison. Whatever started here, I mean, they could not stop. In the end, it ended in a victory for the movement.
In the past, it symbolized an island of oppression, of suffering. Today, because of our victory, our outstanding victory against all odds, it is a symbol of a new beginning, of a new South Africa. It signifies a symbol of what we in the broader South Africa should be doing. We are still such a divided people. Yes, we talk about the need for unity, the Rainbow Nation. It is not happening as fast as it should happen. If we can take a leaf out of this Robben Island page from this book of our experiences, we can actually build a very healthy, fruitful South Africa.
Never and never again shall it be that this beautiful land will again experience the oppression of one by another.
Strong convictions are the secret of surviving deprivation. Your spirit can be full even when your stomach is empty. It was during those long and lonely years that my hunger for the freedom of my own people became a hunger for the freedom of all people, white and black. I knew as well as I knew anything that the oppressor must be liberated, just as surely as the oppressed. A man who takes away another man's freedom is a prisoner of hatred. He is locked behind the bars of prejudice and narrow-mindedness. I'm not truly free if I'm taking away someone else's freedom, just as surely as I am not free when my freedom is taken from me. The oppressed and the oppressor alike are robbed of their humanity. When I walked out of prison, that was my mission, to liberate both the oppressed and the oppressor. Some people say that has now been achieved, but I know that is not the case. The truth is that we are not yet free. We have merely achieved the freedom to be free, the right not to be oppressed. We have not taken the final step of our journey, but the first step on a long and difficult road. For to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others. The true test of our devotion to freedom is just beginning. I have walked that long road to freedom. I have tried not to falter. I have made missteps along the way. But I have discovered the secret that after climbing a great hill, one only finds there are more hills to climb. I have taken a moment here to rest, to steal a view of glorious vista that surrounds me, to look back on the distance I have come. But I can rest only for a moment, for with freedom comes responsibilities, and I dare not linger, for my long walk is not yet ended.
The end of Nelson Mandela's autobiography, Long Walk to Freedom, read for us by Paul Tuzzi. The original program, Robben Island, A Sound Journey, was produced by Lucy Page of the SABC and originally broadcast on Away in 1997. Hindsight Today is produced by me, Lorena Allam, and Charlie McCune. We'll leave you today with this song, You might have heard Walter Sisulu and the others singing it in the program today. It's called Usilethela Umtholo. Nelson Mandela brings us peace. Rest in peace, Madiba.
Tell the whole world, don't you want to be born?